Thank you. So I wish to thank the organizer for this workshop, which is very nice. I would like to speak about a geometric way to see some dynamical construction for Arnold diffusion in nearly integrable system which are a priori stable. Okay, so what is my goal? It's essentially to consider the hyperbolic properties of nearly integrable systems in a way which is independent of the construction of the diffusion orbit. I think that the hyperbolic properties of nearly integrable systems are interesting by themselves, and trying to describe them separately yields maybe an easier theory, maybe some clarification in the theory. In particular, the notion of genericity in this context may be exactly the usual one in the bare setting. And when you are only concerned with normally hyperbolic manifold, because this is the point, you don't have these more technical ways to define genericity, cusp genericity from John Mather. It may be a little more simple. And what I will try to do is to form a skeleton for diffusion. And the skeleton is, you can think of it as a chain of normally hyperbolic manifold, which can be used as a guiding center for constructing orbits. And maybe this kind of ideas could yield an intuition for statistical properties. Maybe very naive, but you can have an intuition. So I will work only with autonomous systems. In a way, it's simpler because you don't have this time dependence, but on the other hand, you have to fix an energy, and the geometry is more difficult to describe. But I think it's a good way to have an intuition of the good objects to look at. Let me recall, of course, there will be a large overlap with the two previous talks by John Mather and Kate Zhang. I apologize for this, but I will say some parts of them again. So I denote by AN the cotangent bundle of the torus with action angle action coordinates, theta and r. When you consider on this completely integrable Hamiltonian, which depends only on the action variable, then each torus, Tn times r0, is fixed, and the dynamics is a linear dynamics, which is described by you start from theta 0 and you add a linear combination of the rotation vector and you project it on the torus. And the dynamical properties of this restriction to a Lagrangian torus is governed by the arithmetic of the frequency vector omega. In particular, omega may be non-resonant or resonant, and when it is resonant, it has some multiplicity. So, in general, when you consider a submodule M of Dn, what you call the associated resonance in the frequency space is the orthogonal of M. And when you want to look at the resonance in the action space, you take its pullback by the inverse of the frequency map, omega. Omega is the frequency map, it's the derivative of H. And from now on, I will only suppose, only consider systems with 3 degrees of freedom, N is equal to 3. So simple resonances in action space are surfaces, and double resonances are curves. Just a word on the geometry. I will assume also that H is strictly convex, the Hessian is definite positive, and superlinear, it's to simplify matters. And I will consider an energy which is larger than the minimum of H, which is unique. Then the energy level bounds a convex domain in the action space, and this level, which is a surface, transversely intersects simple and double resonances. So when you look at resonances in the X action space with fixed energy, you will get curves and closed curves, and double resonance are simply points, intersections of different simple resonances. And I will consider a particular resonance, gamma, which is the one which is associated with the vector E3, the vertical vector. So in this picture, the resonance is the circle, horizontal circle, with suitable radius. Then you have to consider perturbations of this integrable situation. And so to the unperturbed part, H, you add epsilon F of theta and R. I will not address the question of regularity here, so everything is C infinite, for instance. It will simplify the matters. Now, pick some point on gamma, the horizontal circle. So the third component is zero. And assume that the first two components are sufficiently non-resonant. So assume that you can perform a two-frequency averaging at this point. So what is the average potential? It is the function which depends on the parameter R0, which is fixed. And this is a function from T, the torus, to R, defined by the average of the perturbation on the torus of the theta 1 and theta 2 angles. So it's a function of only the angle theta 3, and it depends on the parameter, which is R0 on gamma. And if the point is sufficiently non-resonant in the neighborhood of R0, you can find the conjugacy, a symplectic diffeomorphism, such that when you consider the composed map of the Hamiltonian with the diffeomorphism, you get H of R0 plus R tilde plus epsilon D of theta 3 plus a remainder. And you can forget about the remainder. So the normal form is H of R0 plus epsilon D. And this, if you use the first form I gave for H of R is 1/2 of R1 squared plus R2 squared plus R3 squared, you will only get R3 tilde squared plus V of theta 3 and R0 plus higher order terms plus the part, something like this, which is an uncoupled part here. So you get a classical system on the annulus with 1 degree of freedom, which is, of course, integrable, times a completely integrable system. This is the structure of the normal form at a point like R0 when it is sufficiently non-resonant. And when R0 varies on the resonance, you get a one-parameter family of such systems. So, what at the geometric level, what do you get? in the initial pattern system, this will yield the existence of normally hyperbolic manifold when you use the existence of a normally hyperbolic manifold in this system, and when you use a persistence result when you add the remainder, of course. What is this normally hyperbolic manifold? In this system, you get, in general, if you assume that V has only one non-degenerate maximum, you will get something which is like a pendulum, and you have to take the product with the system which is like this. Here it's theta 3, theta 1, theta 2. Here, and you have to fix the energy. So, what is the hyperbolic manifold? You take here an energy. Maybe you consider that this fixed point is at the energy zero. Then here you have to choose a couple of circles and adjust this pair of circles to get the good energy. So when the parameter varies, what you get is in this unperturbed, in this normal form, what I call an annulus, which is the product of a torus T2 by an interval, 0, 1, like this. This is the prototype of normally hyperbolic invariant object you can expect to get in this situation. Then you add the perturbation, you apply the persistence result, and you will get, the first result was by Patrick Bernard, and more recently by Patrick Bernard, Vadim Kaloshin, and Ketzang. You will get, in the initial pattern system, what they called pseudo-invariant annuli, which are C1 submanifold to which the vector field, Hamiltonian vector field, is everywhere tangent. So they are not necessarily invariant under the flow, so the vector field may be outside at the boundary of the manifold, but it's an interesting object to look at. What I would like to do is to make a slightly different version of this and use only genuine invariant normally hyperbolic manifold. And for this, I have to control the flow at the boundary of the manifold. And in this context of 3 degrees of freedom system, this is possible because when you consider such a pseudo-invariant manifold, if you assume that it contains some KEM torus, isotropic torus, which is diffeomorphic to T2, such a torus may be used as a boundary unit. And the good object for me is the interval in such a manifold between two isotropic KEM torus. This way you get something like this. It's an invariant submanifold with boundary, which is genuinely invariant under the flow. And I will need this because I want to be able to speak of its stable and unstable manifold, which is not possible if you don't have this invariant. Let me recall some first non-degeneracy conditions, which come essentially from the work of John Mather, and which were used in the paper by Patrick Bernard, Kaloshin, and Ketzang, and also in my paper, which is not yet completely written. The first condition is gamma is a closed curve. Assume that there exists a finite subset B in gamma, such that for each point of the complement of B in gamma, the average potential function has only a single non-degenerate maximum, so something like this. And for each point of B, the potential has exactly two non-degenerate maxima. This type of singularity, of bifurcation, is unavoidable in one-parameter families of functions, of course. So this is the first condition, and the second condition is condition of transverse intersection at the points of at the bifurcation points are zero. When you are at such a point, let me just draw maybe the picture. You can have I draw the potential, so you have something like this before R zero. At R zero, the two maxima coincide, and after R zero, the first is under the second, and the crossing is non-degenerate. So the derivative does not vanish at this point. So under these conditions, the previous analy you get in the initial system may be continued by some gluing process. Whatever you use, you can either try to glue together the manifold or try to glue the normal forms. But anyway, you can continue the local analyze and find maximally continuated analyze, provided that the zones, when you look at them, are far enough from another set of points in gamma, which is a set of dangerous double resonant points. And this set depends completely on what you want to do with the normally hyperbolic manifold. Which I want to do is to find regular normally hyperbolic manifolds, I mean of class CP, but P larger than 1, and large enough to be able to apply KN theory inside. So I need P at least equal to 5. And this you can do with a finite number of double resonances, but my set of double resonances is much larger than that of Kezang and Kaloshin and Bernard. But nevertheless, it's finite. Then, outside a given zone, a neighborhood of the doubly resonant point, you will get a picture like this. You get maximally continued analy like this, which are graphs over intervals of the curve gamma. You have this set of bifurcation points, the set B, over which two analy exist. And over this point, they admit heteroclinic connections. This is the picture you get outside the dangerous set. Then there is a problem, of course, when you try to do something close to the resonance. And this problem I like to call it the very large gap problem, to mimic terminology already used by Delchamps, de la Liave and Serra. What is it? You have this finite point, set of points, D, on the curve, gamma, and at each of these points, you have around it a square root of epsilon neighborhood into which the two frequency averaging cannot give you an invariant manifold. This is a problem, and so you have a hole and a finite set of holes in the construction, inside which the first construction doesn't work at all. So what is the normal form you have to use around this point? The normal form is different. What you get is now what you can do is to average only with respect to one fast angle. So there are two slow angles left, and so you will get a normal form which is a system on T2, and it is a classical system on T2, that is the sum of a positive definite quadratic form and a potential. And this quadratic form is independent of the potential. So it's not a general Riemannian metric, but it's a metric with fixed coefficients. And it's important for the study. But what is really important to see is that this is not an integrable system. And even it is not close to an integrable system. And this is the main difficulty. So I will forget about the remainder and only focus on this classical system. So just to understand the situation in this autonomous context, let us look at an integrable example, which is a trivial example. As the unperturbed system, I keep the H, which is the norm, Euclidean norm of the action, and I add the sum of two potential uncoupled with not the same amplitude. The second one has bigger amplitude than the first one. If you look at this system from the point of view of two frequency averaging, which is of course not necessary because it is integrable, but if you imagine that you have to average this system, from the point of view of double averaging, you will get a slow angle, only one, which is theta 3. And the first two angles, you can use them just as you like. So what do you get? You have to remind that the energy is fixed. So you have to fix some point on the last system, which is the red point, the hyperbolic point, and to take the product of this point with the first factor. And the first factor, since the energy of the fixed point is given, you have to adjust the energy on the first factor. What do you get? You get exactly an annulus, which is locally diffeomorphic to T2 times an interval. And on this, you get a normally hyperbolic manifold, which passes through the double resonance. In fact, in this case, this normally hyperbolic manifold is diffeomorphic to T3. You have the angle of T2 and the curve gamma. You have a complete manifold candidate. So, from the point of view of two frequency averaging, you get this. Now, what happens if you imagine that you have only the possibility to average with respect to the first angle? You have to consider that the last two angles are slow, and you take the product with the first angle. And to try to recover the situation, you have to project the second factor on the torus and see what you need to look for. In the first factor, you have only circles. You will take the product by circles. And what you try to recover is the initial form of the analyze. So you need to have a T2 times an interval. So since you have only an angle on the first factor, you need to find a cylinder on the second one. On the second factor, what do you get? you get an integrable system, of course, which is the product of two pendulums. In this product, you have a hyperbolic fixed point, which is the product of the two hyperbolic fixed points, which has homoclinic orbits. In fact, you get a continuous family of homoclinic orbits. But there are two of them which are very special. The one which is really interesting to me is the product of the fixed point in the turn factor with the separatrices in the second one. This one, I drew it here, is the curve here. Then, when you consider the upper part of the second pendulum here, of the theta 2 R2 pendulum, you will get a cylinder of orbits which accumulates to the homoclinic orbit. And when you look at the lower part of the pendulum, you get another cylinder. And these cylinders, when you take their product with the first factor, you will recover the analyte you want to find. And this is exactly the same analyte as in the first system. Of course, it's the same system. So this is to say that when you consider a doubly system at the double resonance, the good thing to look for is a cylinder. That is the one parameter family of hyperbolic orbits. So now let me give more abstract definitions. What is a classical system? It's the sum of a positive definite quadratic form on R2 plus a potential. The quadratic form does not depend on the coefficients on the torus. And I will consider potentials in a subset of Ck of T2. This subset is formed by the functions which admit a single non-degenerate maximum, non-degenerate in the sense of Morse theory. I can always assume that this maximum is at theta equal to zero. Yeah, I came back to the variables theta and R, but now they are on the torus T2. So theta has only two components, and R also. When you lift this point, theta equals zero, to the zero section in the cotangent bundle of the torus, you get a hyperbolic fixed point. And I call the energy of this fixed point, which is exactly the value of U at zero, the critical energy of the system, and I denote it by E bar. Moreover, you can prove that the fixed point, this fixed point, admits homoclinic orbits whose projection on the torus, T2, generate the homotopy group based at zero of T2. This is a classical result, I think, by Sergei Bolotin. Now, other definitions for classical systems. What is a cylinder? Let me fix a closed interval in the interval of energy, which is the interval which will interest me. You have the critical energy, and you consider only bigger energy, larger than this one, and which can go to infinity. And consider an interval inside this interval. Closed interval. So it may be closed or semi-open if one of the extremity is E bar or plus infinity. What is a cylinder in this system, the classical system? What is a cylinder defined over I and realizing a homology class of the torus? It is an invariant manifold for the vector field of the classical system, which is contained in the inverse image of I, the set of energy, such that for each energy in the interval, the intersection of this cylinder with the energy level is a hyperbolic periodic orbit. First condition. You assume also that for any energy inside the interior part of the interval, the periodic orbit admits homoclinic connections. And the last condition, the projection of the periodic orbit on the torus belongs to the fixed class, homology class C. This is a cylinder. Necessarily, such a cylinder is a normally hyperbolic invariant submanifold of R2, invariant by the Hamiltonian system, classical system, which in general has boundaries when the interval is closed. At each extremity of the interval, you get a boundary. Now, what is I say that a finite family of open intervals or open of or intervals, say, of R is ordered when they are arranged in the following way, like in the picture. They have they are consecutive on the line, and they have small overlaps near the extremities. And what is a chain of cylinders realizing some homology class? It's a finite family, C1, Cn, of cylinders, which are defined over each of the intervals which of such a family, with the additional property that two consecutive cylinders admit heteroclinic connections. It's a natural definition for a chain. And you also assume that the intersection is transverse. Now, another object which is very important in my construction is the notion of singular cylinder. For this, you fix a homology class, and the cylinder will realize both the homology class and the opposite class. And what is it? It's a Lipschitz invariant manifold, which is diffeomorphic to the sphere minus three disks, like this, like in the picture, where the intersection of this manifold with the critical energy level, C minus one of E bar, is the union of the fixed point and two opposite homoclinic orbits. This is the critical part of the cylinder, and the remainder is the union of three cylinders, two cylinders and a cylinder minus a disk. This part is a cylinder which realizes the homology class. This part realizes the opposite homology class, and this part realizes the zero homology part class. So this, you can exactly think of it as a pendulum with a neighborhood of the fixed elliptic fixed point removed. In the upper part, the orbits turn in given sense. In the lower part, the orbits goes the opposite way, and here the homology class is zero. So in a way, a singular cylinder is a pendulum which is embedded into the system. So now, what is the result? Assume that K is large enough, then and fix given positive definite quadratic form, and consider the system, classical system, entity of theta and r formed by this quadratic form and plus the potential, and the theorem deals with this potential. So the result is that there exists a residual subset in Ck of T2, the set of potential functions, such that when you choose a potential in this set, then for all homology class, non-zero homology class, you can find a chain of cylinders which realize this class, which is defined over intervals, which go to infinity, and which start from the critical energy. So you have a finite set of intervals like this, and you can find over these intervals cylinders which realize the homology class. The main point is that you can start from the critical energy and go to infinity with a finite family. This is the first point. The second point is that you can find the partition of the homology group of integer classes minus zero, non-zero classes, into two subsets which are symmetric, H and minus H, such that when you take two homology classes in the same subset, then when you consider this, the chain of cylinders you get, so let me draw two chains like this. Imagine that these are cylinders. For these two chains, you have an initial cylinder which goes to the critical energy. When these C and C prime belong to the same subset, then you can find a heteroclinic connection between the first cylinder. Okay? And the third result is that there exists at least one singular cylinder which admits heteroclinic connections with each initial cylinder in all the chains for all the homology classes. There is at least one such singular cylinder. So now, I will give some ideas from the for the proof, but what does it mean when you list all this to the initial system? Then, cylinders in the classical system, after product with the fast angle, there is only one fast angle, will yield annuli in the initial system. You have to perturb them, but it works. And they will yield annuli. These annuli are disposed along simple resonances which cross at the double resonant point you are considering. To each homology class corresponds a line or a resonance which passes through the double resonance. So what is the picture? The picture is this one. First, you have a singular annulus, an annulus which crosses the double resonance. There is at least one, but there can be only one such annulus. Then you have, to each cylinder corresponds an annulus in the initial system, so you will get a chain of annuli like this. Since the singular cylinder realizes one homology class and the opposite one, in the initial system it corresponds to a crossing of the double resonance. So you have an annulus which crosses the resonance, the double resonance, and only one in general. Then you want to do something with the other resonances. And for the other resonances, you cannot cross, so you have to stop at some distance, which is given by the problem, by the perturbation. But the heteroclinic connections between the singular cylinder and the other cylinders at the average level will yield connections between the analy which or the analysis which goes to the resonance and the other one. So, in other words, what can be done in this construction? You can find a way to go to a double resonance. Maybe you cannot cross it with this manifold, but you can jump to another one which crosses the resonance. Then from this one you can jump to the first one, but the opposite side, and this way you can cross the resonance. So this way you can cross the resonance in each simple resonant direction. So I will have no time to give details, but maybe what is the key point here? It's of course a set of non-degeneracy conditions, but most of them are usual and come from the study of the classical system by the so-called Jacobi-Maupertuis principle, which says that such a system, when you fix an energy, is equivalent to a geodesic system. So a classical system is at high enough energy is essentially equivalent to a one-parameter family of geodesic systems. So you have usual notions, but the main one in my construction is to assume that all periodic solutions in the classical system, which realize the homology class you consider, are non-degenerate, in the sense that they admit a characteristic exponent which is not different from one. Without this one, I can do nothing. And, for instance, if you assume this, the cylinders are really easy to obtain. Take the Jacobi-Maupertuis correspondence, fix an energy, then consider the geodesic system. You know that in the given homology class, it will admit a minimizing length minimizing orbit. It will be non-degenerate, and by Poincaré theorem, you know that it is hyperbolic. Varying the energy, you get a one-parameter family of hyperbolic orbits, and it's a cylinder. So this is elementary, easy. Then you have this way, you get a family of cylinder, which goes from the critical energy to the infinite energy. But the family may perfectly be infinite. To get a finite family, you have to control the cylinders both at infinity and near the critical energy. At infinity, it's really easy when you add another condition, which is essentially that the average potential with respect to a suitable homology class has to be non-degenerate. If you assume this, then the usual Poincaré theorem of bifurcations of resonant array into hyperbolic orbit will apply. And why does it apply? Essentially, because after rescaling, a classical system is equivalent to a perturbation of the kinetic energy. And the kinetic energy does not depend on the position, so it is an integrable system. So Poincaré theorem applies, and the higher the energy is, the easier you get the periodic orbits. This way, it's quite easy to produce a single cylinder going to infinity. So the situation is like this. You have this family of cylinders like this, you go quite easily to infinity, and the very difficult point is to prove that there is only one cylinder which accumulates to the critical energy. And this, I have no time to describe, but I do this using a version of the Birkhoff-Main theorem, which is adapted to Hamiltonian vector fields. This is a kind of Shinnikov-Turayev theory, but with some variations. And this is perfectly general. I consider here this theorem in a four-dimensional symplectic manifold. But the difficult point is to specialize this situation to the context of classical systems. Because using the Birkhoff-Main theorem will yield family of horseshoes which are parameterized by the energy. You will get many objects like this, and you have to ensure that these objects have something to see with the cylinders you get by the minimizing theory. So in a way, you will have to ensure that the orbits you get in the Birkhoff-Main theorem are minimizing. And this I can do only by using the non-degeneracy assumption I had to add. So I think I will stop here. Thank you.